The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas is now among more than a dozen states that have cracked down on the practice of surprise medical billing. The new state law, shields patients from getting a huge bill when their insurance company and their medical provider cannot agree on a payment. SB 1264 is a bipartisan piece of legislation. It removes patients from the middle of the disputes between health insurance companies and a hospital or other medical providers. And under the law, insurance companies and medical providers can enter into arbitration to negotiate a payment, and these state officials could help oversee that process. But then again, how is all this going to work? And does this mean the end of surprise medical bills in Texas? Really, not so much. Call in with your questions and comments as we talk about surprise medical billing. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour by Karen Politz. She's a senior fellow at the Kaiser Medical Foundation. Karen, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
John Hawkins is here. He's the senior vice president of advocacy and public policy for the Texas Hospital Association. John, welcome to The Source.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And Blake Hudson is here, associate state director for the AARP of Texas. Blake Hudson, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Karen Politz, what is surprise medical bills? To me, they're all surprising, but there's always something in there that I don't understand. But when is one really a surprise medical bill?
Well, we use the term here at Kaiser Family Foundation to refer to bills that arise when people accidentally go out of network. So people have insurance. Insurance, of course, works the best and covers the most when you go to a hospital or a doctor that has a contract to participate in your health plan's network. That's not always possible, though. In emergencies, for sure, people never choose where, or often don't choose where they go. They go where the ambulance takes them. But even for planned care, if you know you're going to have surgery, if you know you're going to have a baby, you pick a hospital that's in network, you pick a surgeon or an OB-GYN who's in network, you plan all of that, you think you've got the best coverage possible, and then someone else who works in that hospital but doesn't work for the hospital is not in network. So maybe the anesthesiologist or an assistant surgeon or, you know, some other professional who takes part in your care is not in network. You don't pick that person. You might not ever meet that person. You might be asleep, or they might be in some other room looking at your films or your lab results. And the first you know about it is when the bill comes. And the bill could be big because that non-participating provider doesn't have a contract with your health plan to discount their fees. And you can be billed the full charge, and it can be a lot of money.
John Hawkins, you're with the Texas Hospital Association. Seems like hospitals, patients feel like they're caught in the middle, but hospitals probably feel the same thing. You're trying to provide the best care possible for the people who walk through the doors or who are brought into through the doors. And sometimes these surprise medical bills feel maybe outside of the control of the hospital. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, I think you've correctly characterized this is an issue that we have actually worked on for several, recognizing that it is a bad situation for consumers. And frankly, it's not a good hospitals either, particularly if they're the primary provider in these situations. But, you know, Texas is unique. We are a state, one of the few states that does not allow hospitals to directly employ physicians, except in some special cases. So it's impossible for us to, as a condition of privileges, require those physician groups to be in network. There are also other types of providers, lab providers and DME and others, durable medical equipment that could produce a surprise bill as well. So it's always been a difficult situation. We initially actually put in, we're one of the first states to put in a mediation process to deal with this issue. But as I'm sure Blake will discuss a little bit later, AARP was able to point out how really, despite that mediation process, it still wasn't a good situation to have consumers in that situation. So that I think that really compelled all the groups to work toward this solution this session.
So let's go to Blake Hudson with the AARP of Texas. Your constituents probably feel like they are being victimized at times with these surprise medical bills, but I think when we dig in a little deeper, and I hope to do that this hour, is have people understand the complex nature that we have with the way that we pay for medical care in America, and the way doctors get paid and the way hospitals get paid. That's how we arrive at these situations. And we have to think also about protecting the patient, especially those with limited income. Blake, so where are you on this?
Well, our members have for a long time complained to us about surprise medical bills and really just the whole sticker shock in healthcare that folks experience in emergencies, but also with planned procedures. Like John mentioned, that physicians in hospitals in Texas don't employ physicians directly, so consumers often believe that an in-network hospital or other facility is going to come with in-network physicians, but we know that is oftentimes not the case. That I think several different organizations have done studies to show that. We had a guy, let me just tell a very, very brief story. We had a guy from Northeast Texas that wrote to us last fall, and he'd fallen off the scaffold helping a family member build a shed out in really rural Northeast Texas and broke 3 vertebrae in his back, had to be rushed to a hospital and then transferred over to the Dallas area for surgery. During that emergency, him and his wife had the awareness to check that the facility, the hospital, and the surgeon in the Dallas area were going to be in network, and they were. But come to find out later, one of the follow-up physicians that saw him once he came out of surgery was not in network. He racked up $10,000 in bills, which were not completely covered by insurance. And this is really where the story gets me. The gentleman qualified under the state's existing mediation system, but the ER physician group that balanced billed him, that hit him with a surprise bill, they steered him away from that system, leading him to believe that he would lose a discount that they were offering him. So the whole system is just a total mess for consumers, and there was really an awareness in the legislature this past session that something big needed to change.
And the big thing that changed, I guess, was the SB 1264 that was passed. And I don't want to get into the entirety of the bill right now, but still, this does not cure surprise medical bills or not. I mean, so Blake Hudson, we're still going to get surprise medical bills, right?
Well, so this gets a little bit tricky. So the state legislature only has oversight over state-regulated health plans.
Sure, and the federal ones are still outside, and that's like 40% of the plans that we have on the table right now. We're going to get into all of that when we come back from this break. It just shows you how complex this can be. But when you are in need of medical care, you never know when that could be. It could be today. So, you know, emergencies happen all the time. And you want to get the best care possible, but at the same time, you want to be able to survive the recovery of being able to pay for it and not put your family into debt on that. So how does all this work? How can you take advantage of these new reforms, and what other reforms might still be necessary? Call in with your questions and comments. Tell us your stories of your medical bills. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. On September 1st, 2020, that's when the new surprise medical bill officially goes into effect. This will provide some protections for the public against these bills that you get when you go to the hospital. You think you're covered. You think this is in-network, but there are people at the hospital who are still outside of your network if you have insurance. And so you could still get those medical bills several weeks, several months afterwards that have a lot of zeros and a lot of question marks for you. What's happening with these surprise medical bills? Call in with your questions and comments. Tell us your stories. The number is 210-614-8980. So to this point that we brought up with Blake Hudson with the AARP, that not all Texans will be covered by the new law. It does not apply to people who have federally regulated plans. And in Texas, federally regulated plans account for roughly 40% of the state's health insurance market. And this is not some gaping loophole that Texans put in there. This is something because we can't regulate federal plans, according to the state. So Karen Pulitz with the Kaiser Medical Foundation, how does that compare to other states and what's happening on the federal level?
Well, it's true in most states. It's true in every state that most people who are under age 65 and who have insurance get their benefit, their health coverage through work. And a federal law, ERISA, preempts states, and this has been around since the 70s. This has been a problem for a long time. This federal law preempts states from regulating employer-sponsored health plans. So SB 1264 will not be able to reach people who are covered by and large under large employer plans in Texas. If you work for a firm with 50 or more workers, chances are this state law won't reach you. So it falls to the federal government to act on this as well, not just rely on the states. Texas has now joined a number of states, California, New York, that have also recognized this problem and have taken steps to address it. But what we find from the research that we've done looking at claims data from large employer plans is that this problem persists in a big way, even in states that already have enacted and implemented laws like Texas's new law. So we find nationwide, about 1 in 6 people who are covered in a large employer plan will encounter a surprise medical bill when they go to the emergency room or when they get care from an in-network hospital. And in Texas, it's more than twice that rate. About 38% of emergency visits by people covered by large employer plans in Texas, about 38% of those ER bills included an out-of-network claim, a surprise medical bill. And for in-network hospital claims, people working for large firms in Texas last year, 27% of those claims involved at least one surprise medical bill. So the Texas law will be important, and hopefully it'll be important in inspiring the Congress to look at this model and to take actions that can protect the rest of us.
So John Hawkins with the Texas Hospital Association, these numbers showing how the problem is definitely apparent in Texas. And you think that's due to the fact that hospitals in Texas cannot require doctors to be part of a particular network. Is that it?
Yeah. Again, I think Texas probably, as that data shows, Texas still has a very independent kind of medical practice environment out there. And so there are a lot of different factors at play in the marketplace, and certainly we've got a competitive insurance market as well. So depending on how those negotiations are occurring in each of those markets with some of the big physician groups versus the insurance companies, the hospitals can find themselves in a situation where some of the providers are out of network more off, pretty obviously more prevalent than in other areas of the country.
But we have these issues of these narrowing of networks. The networks aren't as robust as they used to be, and they continue to try to pay down or what they can pay doctors. It seems to be lower and lower all the time, and doctors are saying, well, I'm just going to get out of network. Is that something that you're seeing, John Hawkins?
Absolutely. And I should say, you know, we are seeing actually more and more of this issue play out on the facility side as well. Texas is unique. We have really another issue that I'm sure we'll discuss, which is the freestanding emergency rooms, many of those which have an out-of-network business strategy. So it's not just the hospital-based physicians and the pressures, cost pressures on those groups, but it is also, as we've seen, particularly in the Obamacare plans, because of, again, a lot of different systematic reasons, as cost pressures impact those plans, we're seeing narrower networks on the facility side as well. So all of that is ultimately working to exacerbate the problem.
Yeah, so I think as we get through this conversation, it's going to become more and more apparent that if when you're talking about an issue with medical care and how to pay for medical care and insurance, it's a huge matrix issue, and trying to talk about certain points in that entire matrix is just not possible, because one thing impacts everything else. It's very complex and multifaceted. So Blake Hudson, you know, there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah, there certainly is. And I'd sort of build off what John was saying. You know, we see a mix of things happening in the market. You see narrowing networks. You see insurance companies trying to put pressure on lowering prices through demanding lower in-network rates from physicians and hospitals and other facilities. But you also see certain segments of the industry that are purposely staying out of network, like what we've seen with the freestanding ER industry in the state. But I think what our legislators did is they sort of just threw their hands up and said, this is all a mess. We can't fix it all. Let's do everything we can to pull the consumer out of it. And you know, hopefully what we also see is that the federal government step up and do what they can as well.
I'm going to go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Shannon. Hi, Shannon. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes, thanks for having me. So I had recently brought my child to the emergency room. He's fine and everything. And I just received a bill that's going to cost me $2,000 out of pocket for a four-hour ER visit. And on a previous segment, you had discussed hospital fees and ER fees that make up a large portion of the bill. And in my case, that's what is primarily what I'm paying for out of pocket is this ER fee. Is there any legislation that will require these hospital fees, the ER fees, to become publicly reported?
Shannon, thank you for that. John Hawkins, what are ER fees and things?
Yeah, so again, that's a great point. You know, one of the challenges we have in the hospital, well, in healthcare in general, is all the cost shifting that goes on, and a lot of that is related to the fact that you know, Texas leads the nation in the number of uninsured. We are a state that did not expand Medicaid. Obviously, all the challenges with healthcare reform in general, and so. You know, hospitals generally do charge a facility fee. I think in a lot of cases, depending on the facility and what their payer mix looks like, there's a lot of variability among those fees. So I think the legislature has put in a number of provisions over the last few years to increase transparency about the ability to charge that fee. And there's a lot of confusion about urgent care versus ER care and whether or not facilities are in network or out of network. So we've tried to improve that. I think the problem is, as Karen pointed out, that all works well, or it works better when you're able to plan a procedure, not so much when it is a true emergency situation.
So Karen Pulitz with the Kaiser Family Foundation. People frequently try to explain or argue for the medical system as it's a marketplace, and if people did some comparison shopping, then they would be able to get better prices, and Adam Smith's invisible hand would play a role in reducing medical cost. And when we see these emergency situations and we see the lack of transparency in the pricing, and we think we're getting one thing, but we're actually getting something else, we're seeing that all of that argument doesn't really add up to a whole lot.
Well, I think that's right. And Adam Smith, I'm sure, did not imagine today's healthcare system when he was developing his economic theories, that people who need healthcare aren't consumers anymore, they're patients. They're sick. They may be in crisis if it's an emergency. You can't shop. You don't even know what healthcare you'll need, even for a planned procedure. This is not like going to the grocery store where you make a list. I need milk, eggs, cereal. You know, you go in, you don't know if there'll be complications with your surgery. You don't know what tests are going to be ordered, whether, you know, some other crisis is going to come out, which doctors and how many are going to come to your bedside while you're there. There's no way to know.
Well, let me just say, I had a planned procedure, a routine procedure that was recommended as preventative medicine, and was told it was going to be completely covered by my insurance other than my copay. And then I get a bill from the anesthesiologist, which was not expected.
Which was not, right.
You know, it's several
right.
hundred dollars.
So that's what I mean.
And you just roll with it. But, you know, it wasn't what I was told.
Well, right. So, but that's what I mean. Healthcare is often, right, a process, not a commodity that you buy. And there may be many professionals, facilities, providers that get involved in it. And a couple hundred dollars is great. I think in the scheme of things, the Kaiser Health News, which is affiliated with our foundation, has been doing a series, these Bill of the Month stories. And recently they featured a high school teacher in Austin, Texas, who had a heart attack. And the ambulance took him to an out-of-network hospital that billed him. Their extra charges above what the health plan paid were almost $110,000. So these can be ruinous bills. I think the transparency is important because there is some accountability to transparency, and some of these wildly big charges would be at least, you know, subject to the light of day and to more scrutiny. So that I think is helpful, but for patient to put the burden on patients to say you have to shop around, maybe for some very kind of routine planned procedures you could do that, but that's not what's killing people with these surprise medical bills. It's stuff that is beyond patients to really do anything about, to avoid, to plan, to, you know, that's why it's important, I think, for these laws to first and foremost take the patient out of it. Just say these bills and these circumstances have to be covered by the health plan, and then there'll be something, whether it's mediation or a pre-planned fee schedule or something else. Then it's between the hospital or the doctor and the health plan to work out what the payment rate will be, but the patient is out of it.
Right, but so Karen, a lot of people want to assign nefarious motivations to people, particularly when you get this surprise medical bill. Do you think all parties are acting in good faith here?
You know, in Washington, I think all parties have come to the table. They're all on record saying they agree this is an unfair burden and a terrible burden on patients, and it should be addressed. And bipartisan legislation is being developed in Washington, so it may be that all of us who have large employer plans will enjoy similar protections soon. But the big debate now is between the representatives of the insurance industry and the representatives of the hospitals and the doctors about how exactly will these bills be paid? And should there just be a fee schedule, some percentage of what Medicare pays, or, you know, something else, some reference price, or, you know, should it be some kind of a one-off mediation process on each one of these bills? And I think, you know, that will get decided just in terms of, you know, negotiating each one of these bills one at a time. we're talking millions of surprise medical bills every year. So if it is going to be a mediation process or...
Yeah, that's going to be a big endeavor.
There'll be a lot of them.
So, yeah. And I want to talk more about how that process would work and what that would look like if you are the patient. We'll talk about that when we come back from this break. Have you ever been given an enormous medical bill after receiving medical care? Are you currently seeking help in settling those services and figuring out how to pay for that? Call and tell us what happened. What was your story? How could something have stepped in and protected you from that? The number is 210-614-8980. We'll be right back.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In May, the U.S. House Ways Subcommittee, Ways and Means Health Subcommittee, met trying to figure out ways to ban surprise medical billing. The chairman of that committee, by the way, is Lloyd Doggett, San Antonio congressman. Polling shows that the top household pocketbook concern for consumers is a surprise medical bill. That's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Their poll found that 67% of people worry more about that than about prescription drug costs or basic necessities like rent, food, and gas. What about you? Are you concerned about surprise medical bills? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Let's go to James. And James, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I was wondering, I got one of those surprise medical bills. It wasn't huge. It was about $250. But I was wondering what happens, what are the consequences if you decide not to pay the bill? Does it affect your credit or where does it go from there?
Thank you for that call, James. So let's go to Blake Hudson, Associate State Director for AARP of Texas. What if you don't pay?
That's a great question. And there actually was an additional piece of legislation that passed this past session of Senate Bill 1037, which prohibits the credit agencies from putting surprise medical bills. If you have insurance and you incur a surprise medical bill from an emergency or from a planned procedure where you didn't know who was going to be treating you, those bills can no longer go on your credit report as of June 1st. So if you don't pay it, I don't know how you say this, but you're sort of off the hook. And that applies to both state-regulated and federally regulated health plans.
Right. So let's find out what the hospitals say about that. John Hawkins?
Well, I think generally, you know, in Texas is a little bit different than a lot of other states. I think our laws are generally more consumer friendly when they deal with medical debt. And I think you'll find in most cases, the hospital systems are very proactive about working these issues out with folks. Most hospitals obviously have a charity care policy. They have a sliding scale beyond that if it's more than just indigent care, and they're usually willing to work on a payment plan. And I think generally are averse to actually putting these into the credit process. They would much rather work these issues out up front.
Let's go to Karen Politz on that question as well. What do you tell people?
Well, in general, medical debt is a leading cause of bankruptcy, of people's credit ratings being harmed. So I'm not as familiar with the Texas law. It sounds like that's a very important protection in that state. But generally, when you're billed by a doctor or a hospital, they can and will come after you. And if that shows up in your credit report, that can haunt you for years.
All right.
Make it hard for you to get a loan or refinance your house or your car, anything like that.
So you would not recommend that people just ignore these bills and throw them in the trash?
Well, I never recommend to ignore a bill. I always think it's good to call. ask what this is about, express concern if you think it's a mistake or you think it's unfair, ask if, you know, they would reconsider or review. But I generally don't ever throw a bill away. I make a call and follow up to find out what else I could do.
So there is a statute of limitations in Texas for medical bills after 4 years. You can't be sued over medical debt. After 7 years, medical debt is taken off the credit report. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to just add that one aspect of this is that insurance companies can be very disingenuous. I had a planned procedure with a specialist, and I was told that 80% would be covered, and my insurance was checked with, and I had planned because I had to save the money to get this done, and then come to find out that it was 80% of what the insurance company considered to be appropriate. So out of a $2,000 bill, medical bill, the insurance company only paid $52. So I was left with a lot of money that I hadn't planned to spend and had to put it. Luckily, I had a credit card because I didn't want to go into collection services. But I think this transparency is excluding the idea that insurance companies are disingenuous, even with the providers, because the provider was taken by surprise.
Kathy, thank you for the call. So under this new law, which doesn't go into effect until September 1st, 2020, how would Kathy have had some protections, Blake Hudson?
So let's just assume that Kathy's in a state-regulated health plan, which if you look at your insurance card and it says TDI for Texas Department of Insurance or DOI for Department of Insurance, you would be in a state-regulated plan, for one. The way it would work is if it sounds like it was out of network and the insurer had an in-network allowable amount, they paid some portion there, but then you were responsible for the remainder. So under this new law, you would not be allowed, the healthcare provider would not be allowed to bill you for that remainder if they wanted to collect additional reimbursement from the health plan. They would go through an arbitration system. That arbitration system would look at a number of factors, including what the physician charged and what the insurer reimbursed, and they would sort of pick a winner and a loser. But the consumer would never see that bill. In fact, sending that balance bill will now be illegal in Texas come January 1st.
But what does that mean, go into an arbitration system? I mean, that sounds stressful.
Well, the most important part of it is that the consumer does not go into the arbitration system. This is a system that will be between providers and insurers. Unlike our current mediation system, the consumer has to be aware of it, trigger it, and sort of follow it as it goes along, which is a real big downside to it. But under the new arbitration system and the changes to the facilities will still work under a mediation system, but regardless, the consumer won't participate at all, will never see the bill. So much, much more stress-free for consumers.
But in these types of systems, I imagine if you have an advocate for the person who the doctor or whoever's trying to collect the money, and then who's the advocate for the consumer in that situation, in that arbitration, Blake?
Well, again, from the consumer perspective, you're not going to see any additional bills that are above your deductible and your copay and your coinsurance. So the consumer's been taken care of under the new system. And then that provider and the insurer are their own advocates, and they will utilize the arbitration system. But no matter what happens in that system, they can't come back to the consumer, to the patient, for additional payment. They are prohibited from doing that.
And so John Hawkins with the Texas Hospital Association, will the hospitals be made whole in recovering the money that they need to recover in order to care for patients?
Well, as Blake has pointed out, it's really just a negotiation between the provider and the health plan. And as Blake pointed out, we have had that arbitration system mediation system for some time now. And really most of those on the facility side get resolved informally with just a couple phone calls between the provider and the health plan, particularly in the facilities case where we're generally in network, and so we have what's known as a usual and customary rate that both sides are used to dealing with. So it's a pretty straightforward process of negotiation. I think really to Karen's point, the discussion that's playing out in D.C. right now is really a situation where you've got providers that are generally out of network and there's not a good usual and customary rate. And depending on how you structure both that initial payment as well as the mediation or arbitration and what the benchmarks are, that can have an impact on the market, which might tilt the playing field, more to the advantage of the providers or the health plan. So really, we had that discussion in Texas. I think we got to a good place on how that works for facilities versus providers, and that's what the discussion will be in D.C. And I should point out as well, I was actually at a meeting a couple weeks ago with my other state associations, and in New York, they've had this arbitration process in place just for providers, not for facilities. And really, they're only seeing about 600 cases a year going to mediation. So really, I'm sure there was an initial kind of bolus of those cases. But I think, to Blake's point, this really is hopefully market changing. And once we kind of work through those initial claims, there'll be some level setting in the market, and it won't be such an onerous process.
And Blake, back to what you said, what did you say on starting January 1st, we won't see any of these surprise medical bills? Is that what you said?
Right. Yeah, that's the way the law works. It gets implemented January 1st takes effect January 1st. And if you're in a state regulated health plan, it is illegal to send you a balance bill. Some providers may still do that, and there will have to be a process for going after any bad actors that aren't complying with the law or unaware of the new law. But the under the law, you just won't get the bill.
And if you do get a bill, what do you do?
You should go to the Department of Insurance. Texas Department of Insurance has a complaint process, and they're great at sorting these kinds of things out, and they will help you.
And they just can't come up with new terminology and skate around all these new laws, Blake?
That's a good question.
All right, we'll talk about that when we come back from the break, because you never know what's around the corner. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. What's up with these surprise medical bills? Have you gotten one? Are you still dealing with trying to pay one off? And we're hearing that it could be a thing of the past real soon. So what do you think about that? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the future, when a hospital and the insurer can't agree on a price for the caring for a patient, the two parties will have to work it out without ever billing that patient. That is the end of surprise medical billing. At least that's what is in the law that was passed in the legislature. And that was Senate Bill 1264. What is going to happen to medical care? How will this impact doctors and hospitals as well as patients? I've got a question or a comment, call. The number is 210-614-8980. We have Kimberly on the line. Kimberly, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you very much for listening to me today.
Cool. Go ahead.
I had a heart procedure done that had been cleared by insurance, and I went in, had this outpatient service done, and then went home and received a bill later for $15,000. The insurance had cleared it ahead of time, but denied it after the procedure was done because I wasn't actively dying whenever I had the procedure on my heart to diagnose what the issue was.
That seems like not actively dying. Aren't we all actively dying, Kimberly?
You would indeed think so, wouldn't you? But because I wasn't dying whenever they put me on the table, like I wasn't in cardiac arrest, they denied my claim for this procedure that diagnosed a congenital heart defect.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're doing better. So let me hear from Karen Politz. She's a senior fellow at the Kaiser Family Foundation. And what do you make of Kimberly's story?
Well, that's a different kind of surprise bill. It sounds like outside of the purview of SB 1264 and this other legislation we've been talking about. But people do encounter problems even with medical bills that they can't afford, even when they have insurance. Sometimes it's because the claim was denied, which sounds like happened in your case. And if it's a procedure that you had pre-approved by the insurer, then it's definitely worth appealing that denial. It could be that, I don't know, something got coded incorrectly, but the whole point of prior approval is the insurance says, yes, I'll cover this. So I would definitely look into that. But insurers do deny claims a lot, often for kind of knucklehead reasons. There was just some, you know, number that was put in wrong in the bill or something like that. People can, you know, seek care from an in-network provider, and then it turns out the health plan's provider directory was not up to date or was inaccurate, and so it ends up being a surprise medical bill, even though they tried to go in-network. Deductibles are going up in health insurance, and so even when care is covered, if it hits a big deductible, a $3,000 or $4,000 deductible, you could end up owing a lot more money than you thought, because you didn't realize the procedure would be that expensive to begin with. So this problem we've been talking about today of surprise medical bills when people accidentally go out of network is it's a big one, and it's a big concern to people. But as Kimberly has pointed out, I think there are other concerns, important concerns that people have about their insurance coverage and whether it's adequately protecting them.
I'm still trying to make sense of all this. John Hawkins, you're telling me that this is the law in Texas that hospitals cannot require doctors who work there to be part of the network. We have this sort of independent streak in what we do and how we run these operations. And then how is that going to follow with the termination, no more surprise medical bills?
So I think it will have an impact on really those market negotiations, because as I mentioned before, I think what we're seeing is you've got some large physician groups in the state that because of market conditions are in a dispute with different health plans over the rate that they charge, and you know, you can argue about who has more leverage in those situations. And so, you know, that's the problem that the hospitals have historically been kind of caught in the middle of. But again, the inability to create an out-of-network bill now, at least for those state-regulated plans, I think will definitely change the marketplace out there, and we'll just have to see, you know, how that shakes out. And I can tell you that many hospital systems, at least in their initial contract, will actually include language that requires the physicians to be in the same networks as the hospitals. But again, that you can ask, but that can't be a requirement of those of the privileging.
Do you, unintended consequences, you never know. I mean, they're unintended. You don't know what's going to happen. But John Hawkins, with the Texas Hospital Association, will this end of surprise medical billing have some sort of impact on how hospitals operate?
Well, certainly. Again, you know, we don't want to be in a situation where you don't have access to the appropriate hospital-based physicians. So, you know, at the end of the day,
but people got to get paid,
right? So, you know, what I think the challenge we have now, particularly given the level of the uninsured in the state, is hospitals are providing significant resources to cover call in the emergency room. So, I think our concern, and again, that's why it's important that this be a fair balance on both sides of the equation, not just for facilities, but for physicians as well, because we don't want the hospitals to be put in a situation where we're having to additionally subsidize those costs, because again, those costs ultimately get passed on, if it's uncompensated care, to taxpayers if you're in an area that has a taxing district, or the private market. That cost shift is really one of the reasons we see charges as high as they are.
if we lose the Affordable Care Act that's being litigated now, and that has increased the number of people in Texas who have insurance, although it's still the lowest in the nation, is that going to make complying with this end of surprise medical billing even tougher, John Hawkins?
Well, I think as Blake stated, every piece of this has a consequence somewhere else. And again, at the end of the day, particularly from the hospital perspective, the more folks we have covered in the state, particularly in private health insurance, as long as it's affordable and the cost sharing is appropriate, that's going to be better for the medical system as a whole. It's going to be better for hospitals. It's ostensibly going to be better for patients because they're able to deal with care proactively. So really, at the end of the day, coverage is the key, and that's why we really do need a solution going forward, not just on the Affordable Care Act, but the whole Medicaid expansion piece as well, which Texas has not chosen to access those federal funds.
Or maybe some sort of comprehensive universal health care. That could be something in the presidential election coming up. Let's go to Cindy on the phones. Hey, Cindy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I had a procedure done a couple of months ago, and usually beforehand they let you know how much you're going to owe. Well, I did not find out until I actually got to the hospital, and I had to come up with $1,500. Then afterwards, when I got my claim from the insurance company, I find out I overpaid $600. So now I'm trying to get that back from the hospital. And I've also noticed when I've been going to physical therapy, they overcharge me as opposed to what the claim actually shows.
Wow. Okay. So, Cindy, thanks for calling in. Karen Pulich, you probably hear a lot of stories like this with the Kaiser Family Foundation. Do you think that I know I don't pay close attention to bills and things, but people need to. Like Cindy, seems like she's talking about her money. She's trying to take care of it, but people have got to look at their bills and compare things, right?
Yeah, and I'm sorry for what has happened to Cindy, because at a minimum, that's a lot of hassle to kind of chase all those things down and try to get your money back. Did the hospital demanded $1,500 payment up front? Is that what you said?
She paid $1,500 after care. And after insurance care. Says she overpaid.
Okay. Well, yeah. So it's definitely important, particularly if the hospital or the physical therapists are in network, to go back to them and show them your EOB, your statement from the insurance company, tell them you need your money back immediately. And it's also important to report that to the insurance company, because that hospital and those therapists, they signed a contract with your health plan that said they would not charge you more than the agreed discounted price that they negotiated with your health plan. So they're in violation of the contract, and the plan should be made aware of that as well.
So Blake Hudson with the AARP of Texas, are you thoroughly satisfied with how Senate Bill 1264 worked out? Do you think that we got about the best thing that we could have gotten out of this legislature on this?
Oh, I think so. I think very much so. Our legislature is pretty far ahead of a lot of legislatures around the country on this issue, where on healthcare stuff, it's not always the case in Texas, as John pointed out with our refusal to accept Medicaid expansion funds. So we're out in front of this issue. We've been working on it here in Texas for a decade. I think we've done all we can. One cool thing about the legislation, too, is the legislation requires that the Department of Insurance study what happens to premiums and access to care. So we're really going to see how this all plays out for consumers in the coming years.
And what will you be watching specifically, Blake? What is there anything that troubles you?
Compliance and enforcement. I'm worried about physicians that aren't aware of the new law and continue to balance bill, even though we've essentially made it illegal. So we're going to have to figure that out. We're going to be looking at it pretty closely at AARP.
And patients need to know their rights.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other piece is the federal government needs to act. The federal government has a piece of this, and the state does. The state stepped up. The feds need to now, too.
All right. Blake Hudson is the Associate State Director for the AARP of Texas. We're also joined by Karen Pulitz. She's a senior fellow at the Kaiser Family Foundation. John Hawkins is a senior vice president of advocacy and public policy for the Texas Hospital Association. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. Thanks for supporting public radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.